And now for reading and writing and radio.
I saw my chair all smashed to smithereens. I went upstairs and looked in my bed, and there she was!
Goldilocks, tell this court what you have to say in your defense.
Your Honor, all I did was walk into this little house in the woods and eat up all the porridge and sit down in that flimsy little chair and then fall asleep in that little bed. That's all I did!
Goldilocks, you are guilty of trespassing and destruction of property.
Tom the Piper's son stole a pig and away he run.
Tom, tell this court what you have to say in your defense.
Well, Your Honor, there was this fat little pig, see, just running loose, and I figured, finders keepers, losers weepers. And so we had some ham for Sunday dinner, sausage for breakfast, and hot pork sandwiches for lunch.
Tom, you are guilty not only of theft, but of eating up the evidence.
She gave them some broth without any bread and whipped them all soundly and sent them to bed.
Old woman in the shoe, what can you tell this court in your defense?
Your Honor, they were all getting on my nerves so bad I couldn't stand it any longer. Haven't you had one of them days with your own kids? And I finally grabbed a stick and whopped the stuffing out of all of them.
Old woman, off to jail with you. You're guilty of child abuse. It followed her to school one day, which was against the rule. It made the children laugh and play to see a lamb in school.
Mary, have you any defense?
Can I help it that my lamb follows me everywhere? I told it to go home.
But you broke the rule, Mary, and for that you get a detention.
The author of those scenes, well, they're parodies of Mother Goose. But have you ever broken the law, too?
WSSR Radio at Sangamon State University presents Reading and Writing and Radio, a program about creative writing. Your host is Jacqueline Jackson, children's author and professor of literature at Sangamon State University.
Laws about trespassing, theft, child abuse, and about the age you can drive and the age you can vote, and that every kid has to go to school, and we're all governed by regulations, laws, and rules. And here to talk with us today about kid power is Jan Grimes, who often helps with this program and is the mother of kids ages 8 and 4, and Frank Kopecky, professor of legal studies at Sangamon State and a lawyer whose specialty is children and the law. He's the father of 3 kids, 13, 12, and 2. And then myself, Jackie Jackson. And my 4 kids are so grown up that only Ellie in college still sometimes classifies as a kid. And we're asking these questions. Why do we have laws and rules? Where do they come from? And then about kids' connections with laws and rules. Do you kids have any share in making them? How might you have more share? And should you even have more share? I mean, after all, you're only kids. So let's bat all this around for 15 minutes or so, and let's start with the 2 easy ones, Jan and Frank. Why do we have regulations and laws and rules anyway, and where do they come from? Who makes them?
Well, laws, simply put, are the rules that govern us. They can be as formal as the statutes passed by the Illinois legislature, where we see in the papers every year, or they can be the rules that exist within a family, or the rules that govern our day in school. The important thing is they're rules that govern our behavior. We recognize them, and they usually come from some sort of authority figure. in society.
Mm-hmm. And they're for our protection, aren't they?
For the most part, they're for our protection. It would be a very unordered world if there weren't laws that govern behavior. One can imagine hundreds of people on a schoolyard all running in various directions with no requirements that they play baseball in one area or not run in various directions, pushing each other, et cetera, without some sort of rules.
For your littlest kids, you have to have a rule to keep them from going across the street.
That's correct.
And how far they can go from home.
One of the first rules we learn is that streets are dangerous and we can't cross streets in the middle of the street. And we learn about stop signs and lights, and we're punished for that oftentimes, even by our own family.
Aside from protection, aren't rules sometimes like keepers of the peace?
Oh, yes.
Just so things don't get out of control.
Of course. We need rules so that all of us can have a certain degree of freedom. We have to sacrifice some of our ability to act as just as we wish any time at any place so that we can keep the peace, because there can be a sense of order in society.
I remember my sixth grade teacher said to me once that your power to do what you want with your fist ends where my nose begins.
That's correct. It's a very good example.
So you can't put your fist anywhere you want to.
Free speech, a very important right and a rule, is meaningless if everybody talks at once in a classroom.
Yeah. Well, let's see. We said an authority figure makes the rules. The government, the senators and the representatives and so forth, and the teachers at school and the parents at home. They all seem to be grown-ups, right? So that age is power?
Well, in a formal sense, yes. In order to make rules and pass laws, age is power. You have to be at least 18 to vote in the state of Illinois, and for the most part, that's considered the age of decision-making. So if you're below that age, any influence you have is indirect through your parents or through your schools, except in certain situations where children are given power, say in student councils and other places where they are specifically given some voice in the process.
Well, that's bringing us then to our questions of, you know, do kids have any share in this power? And they would then in the student councils and all, unless they're meaningless, unless they decide to do something and then the teachers and the principal say, oh, no, even though you passed that rule, that's something that you can't do.
Well, I remember back when I was in student council, I often felt that it was meaningless, but in a sense there is a governing law that divides the power. Most schools specifically state, like a constitution, what the student council can do and what it cannot do. And those kind of governing laws, oftentimes constitutions, called constitutions of the student senate, tell the students what their power is in relationship to the principals and the teachers. Mm-hmm. And it's very important that those be laid out at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Jan, I remember being fascinated with your telling about your family setup for deciding on family powers. You want to tell us about that?
Sure. I was one of four children. And what family meeting was all about at our house was once a week on Sunday, the Sunday dinner table, we had not only rule-making, but also judgment time. First came complaints.
Sounds like you might get ulcers on Sunday.
Yes, it had its disadvantages. But first would come complaints, and if somebody had taken your bike without asking or hurt you or done any grievance against you, you had the chance to sort of state the case. And then when we went around the table and sort of got the general facts, and then the six people at the table took a vote on whether it sounded like there was a case against somebody or not. And if you had three complaints against you that held up, you lost your allowance. Now, the second part of family meeting was rulemaking time, and somebody could mount a motion, and, for instance, bedtime is 8 o'clock, I propose it should be 9 o'clock. And there'd be some discussion, and then we'd put it to a vote. And sometimes the kids upped their bedtime, sometimes we got ourselves more allowance. But it really evened out because we were a family of two older ones and two younger ones, and we didn't always have it together. And so,
you mean the kids?
Right,
yeah.
Right. The kids did not really, we're not sophisticated enough for all four of us to get it together and vote against our parents. So, and one of the disadvantages of the family meeting was you didn't get immediate retribution. and some communication was lost.
Mommy and say,
right. Mom would say, bring it up at meeting. I'm not going to handle it. You know, that sort of a thing. And I think we might have settled it more by the survival of the fittest and struggles and bargaining more easily amongst ourselves if we didn't have a meeting. But on the other hand, we learned a lot about decision making and rule making.
Mm-hmm. And how a governing body works.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very nice example of the phrase we used to use of participating in democracy. All the families meeting together, mediating disputes, discussing them, in fact, empowering the children to make certain decisions. And it's probably the way the most important rules which govern our day-to-day life, particularly for children, are made through some sort of informal process, not the state legislature or the way the kind of laws that are in the law books if you go into a law library.
Among the beginning laws that I can remember were at the age of 3 saying, I want to make a law, but had one which held up and made me feel really powerful was I had been embarrassed and I had spilled bubbles all over my good dress before we were going someplace with another family, and because I was the one that held up the works, my father explained, well, we're late because Janet did da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And I was mortified, and I brought it up at the next meeting, and then we then had a rule on the books that you cannot purposely embarrass somebody.
Yeah.
It sure made me feel better.
Sounds like a very good rule.
Frank, you, when we were talking about this yesterday, you brought up the whole Atari business at your house that I found fascinating in the questions that it raises.
Yes. What it raises, let me just tell the facts. Children oftentimes own property that are given to them through gifts, or sometimes they earn through their own money, paper routes, et cetera. That's how my children gained money. And they bought an Atari, which has now been replaced by a more sophisticated and modern computer. They have decided they needed money to buy a dirt bike, so they sold the Atari. And the question came up, do they have the right to sell that Atari? Now, if you look at the formal law, the laws that are in the law books, parents probably own all property that kids own, with the exception of large amounts of money that they might get through wills.
Or if they're a child prodigy.
Or a child
TV
prodigy,
star,
and they earn a lot of money,
Gary
that sort
Coleman.
Of thing. Yeah, Jerry Coleman or somebody like that.
The Shirley Temple Clause is what
right,
you said.
Right, Shirley Temple Clause, as you see the date that we come from. But in a family situation, you just can't operate that way. The fact of the matter is, at least within our family, it was the child's property. The child had bought it with the money that he earned, and regardless of what the general rule said, it was the child's authority to give that away.
Well, why did you care anyway if they gave it away?
Well, I cared because there's a younger child that I, as the father, wanted to make sure the Atari was available for, and quite honestly, I like to sneak down and play Pac-Man once in a while also. At family discussion of this incident, not quite as structured as Jan was describing, we concluded that yes, and in fact was the son's, older son's property, and they could sell it, and although it would be better if they would discuss that with the family before they made that decision so that we could pass it on to younger children or to dad.
Or they might have sold it to you.
Or they might have sold it to me. That was the option I had suggested. Interesting thing, another law had come in. By this time, the child who they had sold it to had made a down payment and had purchased certain accessories and bought a few new games, so it was unfair to back out of the contract with that other child. So we discussed it in terms of law, but we also discussed it in terms of family relationship, and the important part was that the family relationship won out and the child was empowered, and I did not fall back on a lawyer-like trick and say, well, you have to do that because that's the law, because the law that is really important is the law that governs within the family relationship.
What would you do in a case, say, if they needed to make a payment on this dirt bike and they didn't have it and they took their good sweater and sold it?
Well, after getting extremely angry, I would imagine there would be a rule against that because the good sweater There'd be a distinction there in the sense, or a difference in the sense, that the good sweater I bought for them.
Uh-huh. And also clothing, it would have to be replaced.
It would have to be replaced. And I think there would be perhaps some sort of rule established or punishment meted out about not giving away essentials as compared to luxuries that you didn't purchase. But these are the way laws are made. We have to make, whether we're dealing in an informal way or in a very formal way, we have to look at the value of what we're trying to protect and various alternatives to try to protect that value.
Well, now, one of you told me yesterday about a town that had decided that kids were spending tremendous amounts of money at these video game parlors. And so they'd made a rule, a law, a town ordinance, that the kids, nobody under 12, could go into this video place or Chuck E. Cheese or whatever it was, where they would be wasting their money. Do you think kids have a right, that this is a law that shouldn't be, that they can go and spend their money just as foolishly as they want to, or do they need protection from an ordinance?
Well, it would be interesting to see what the kids think of that, but from my perspective, I think that that ordinance is appropriate and proper, that children do, in fact, need to be protected from making foolish decisions and being exploited. Much of our law does that. We have child abuse laws that protect children. We have laws that would not allow children into theaters where X-rated movies are being shown, all because we're concerned that young people do not have enough wisdom to make those decisions on their own. So we have to provide laws that protect them from making bad decisions. A lot of children would argue that they should have the right to make those decisions on their own, and I certainly have been on the side of advocating that on occasion on various other points.
This is then around the question of should kids have more power or power in certain situations. And you were saying that you thought the kids probably ought to be able to vote younger than they do.
Yeah, well, I'm one of those radicals that would probably advocate that we should lower the voting age to maybe 15 or 16. Be so that children would start participating earlier while they're in high school. Wouldn't be a mock election, it'd be a real election. And I do think that children probably would do no worse in their decision-making than many adults would in as far as electing people.
What about undue pressure or influence? Say a teacher is very influential over a kid, and so is a parent very influential over the kid, and they'll say, okay, you know, your vote has got to be for so-and-so.
That's true. There would be that kind of pressure, but that pressure could exist at 18 or 19. It may exist in a marriage situation where one spouse tries to persuade another spouse to vote. The point you're raising is usually an argument against lowering the voting age. I just don't see it as outweighing the benefits. The benefits, once again, are informing people about the importance of the electoral process when they're young and encouraging participation when they're young.
And also they're getting the training right then.
Right. And they're also being empowered.
In their classes.
They're also being empowered. I think those of us who are in the legislature would feel differently if we knew that a large portion of the voting were younger.
An interesting side of this conversation to me is that, you know, Frank has made the statement that he sort of would like to protect children from squandering their money and maybe doesn't have the confidence that they would make wise choices with money. And yet, on the other hand, there's a sort of a contrast in that he would trust them and not to squander their vote.
Right.
Now, from my own standpoint, it seems that I value for children the right and the power to learn for themselves. And so I would go along with the vote, even if society might be hurt by some unwise voting. I think adults have the right to vote unwisely, too, and it wouldn't bother me that much to have it be a few years younger that it occurs. But I would follow that through with the spending of money, too. I think there's hardly an adult who approves of the way in which a child spends money. Adults already have a list of needs and necessities, and, you know, every time your child buys a bag of candy, you wonder if that's wise, and so I guess I would bring that all the way to Chuck E. Cheese, that there's a lot of ways in which kids spend money that are necessary for them to learn what the difference is between a wise choice and an unwise one.
I think we're talking about age, and at what age do we empower people to make decisions? And right now, for most purposes, it is 18, and maybe we should be a little more sophisticated and say that the example that was given about the video games, we were talking about an ordinance that prohibits children under 12 mm-hmm. and voting. I was talking in terms of 15 or 16. Mm-hmm. I wasn't lowering it much. We have to think of when people are independent enough to do certain acts and empower people to make those decisions. But I might add that we also have to think of in terms of parents' rights and parents' responsibilities. And for the most part, I don't want to lose the authority the parents have over controlling those decisions by children.
Mm-hmm. I hate to cut this off because there's a million more things we can talk about, but our time is up, and so I want to say to you kids that are listening that for our writing today, tell us about power or the powerlessness in your life. Do you feel that you have a share in the rules that you have to go by at home or at school or even in society? How does your family, how does your school handle regulations? What rules are you glad you have, and what rules would you change if you could? And do some of these rules seem to be not fairly enforced, not fair? And in addition to your individual stories, here's an idea that the whole class might tussle with for a bit. Do kids have rights? What would you suggest as a list of rights that every kid is entitled to? And then do we have laws that protect those rights, or are there some that don't have any laws that protect them? So today I'd like to hear from you on kid power or kid powerlessness, and I want to thank you, Frank and Jan, for being with us.
WSSR Radio has presented Reading and Writing and Radio. Send your writings to Jacqueline Jackson, Sangamon State University, Springfield, Illinois, 62708.